Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Again on Circles of Change, and a happy Father's Day weekend to all of our listeners, hither and non. And in fact, a great dad on the line with me, my friend Dr. David Reuter. Welcome to the show, David. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. It's a pleasure to join you, Zara.
It is indeed. We're both Purdue grads, so folks are going to have to put up with that. Well, let me give a brief introduction. David is co-founder and chief medical officer of Cardiac Dimensions, a Seattle-based bioengineering company developing a catheter-based implant for patients with heart failure. A civil engineer by initial training, David completed a combined MD-PhD and went on to specialize in pediatric medicine. So today, in addition to his business entrepreneurship, he's director of Cardiac Innovations for Seattle Children's Hospital Pediatric Cardiology Division and is a pediatrician in their emergency department. Author of over 30 published medical journal articles, recipient of 14 patents, and instructor at the University of Washington, obviously David is deeply involved in the changing landscape of medical innovation and healthcare. He also happens to be the only guest so far, in over 500 for me, who sent me a technical publication and a PowerPoint from which to prep. So he knows that my doctorate is in management, but I gather you were challenging me, right, Dave?
Got to maintain our edge.
That's exactly right, and he did it for me, that's for sure. And then, of course, last but not least, David's third and most important section of his life is being husband to Amy, the founder, president, and chief nutrition officer for Seattle Food Nut, and then dad to middle school students Sarah and Thomas, who are 13 and 11, respectively. So have they got a good weekend planned for you?
We have a fabulous weekend. It happens to be my wife's birthday today, so we've already had a special breakfast with apple crepes. The kids have a piano recital in a few hours, and we've got a spectacular dinner planned at a lovely Italian restaurant downtown Seattle.
Well, it doesn't get better than that. Well, great. Well, let's pack in a quick 20 minutes so you can get off to the fun. David, Cardiac Dimensions, I mean, as if you didn't have enough on your plate being a full-time doctor, how did it come about you're launching then into the medical device area?
You know, you mentioned Purdue, and I probably have to go back that far because it was the president of Purdue, President Beering, who had been the dean of the medical school, who said, David, if you're interested in an MD-PhD, we'd be willing to support you through that cause. And I think President Beering, as a physician who had been practicing for 20 or 30 years before me, he understood that in medicine, there's plenty of patients for whom we have a good solution, but there's also patients out there for whom the research hasn't been done. We haven't identified a good way to take care of them. So back in my Purdue days, I did the combined degree, and then when I was in pediatrics in Pittsburgh, especially as a pediatrician where children are not supposed to be sick, the ones for whom you can't offer them something are very moving. And so when the opportunity came for me to start Cardiac Dimensions, there were some friends of mine who had been in the bioengineering business for 20 years, and they said, David, heart failure is a big problem. When the valves within the heart leak, that's a big problem. Here's $1.5 million. Go solve the problem. And at the time, I was a full-time pediatrician. I said, you know what? I would rather split my time, part of the time in the ER taking care of kids, but the other part of the time trying to innovate new solutions for both adults and children.
So you think about that, to live, obviously, working in the ER, that you're very much in the present, having to make decisions quickly, you know, responded to the potentially life-threatening dynamics. And then on the flip side, you're over there on this longer flight horizon with clinical trials and, I understand, working the globe with doctors that are actually testing out the device that you gentlemen are coming with, ladies and gentlemen, coming up with. So you live in multiple worlds then.
You know what? It's probably my most rewarding element of being in a startup, which is you spend 2 or 3 years really kind of hunkered down, a very small group of people, being creative, trying to innovate something, and then you mature it to the point where you can initiate clinical trials. But once you have a new therapy, opportunities simply open up
to
the extent that you can initiate trials, whether it's in Australia, Paraguay. I'm flying to Germany tomorrow, and I now have friends around the world, and we all have a common mission, which is let's take this idea and make it as big and successful as it can be.
And that idea, Dave, explained in layman's term, although, you know, I read the paper, right? But explain in layman's term what you all are up to and how fundamentally important this is.
So cardiac dimensions has been treating the problem of mitral regurgitation, which happens in heart failure. And really, it's the story is pretty simple. A classic story would be somebody who has a heart attack, you injure the ventricular muscle. When the heart muscle's injured, the heart dilates in order to compensate. Mm-hmm. So the heart dilates, and when the heart dilates, the valves within the heart get bigger as well. And so the valve leaflets don't work as they normally would. It's almost as simple as the door frame is too big for the doors. The doors don't close. And in the case of the heart, blood goes backwards instead of forwards. So that's the problem that we're dealing with. On the left side of the heart, it's the mitral valve. And so instead of blood going to the rest of the body, half of the blood goes back into the lungs. And it's what contributes to the shortness of breath of patients and actually dramatically increases their mortality as well. So that was our problem. Surgery had been offered in the past, but the morbidity and mortality of surgery is kind of makes it a non-viable option. Mm-hmm. So what we did was to develop a catheter-based therapy. So I put we bring a patient into the cath lab, lay them on the table with just conscious sedation, put a small catheter in a neck vein. We get into the heart, and there's a vein, one of the blood vessels, encircles the mitral valve. And so I have a little metal implant, and we deploy it in this vein, and we essentially cinch up the tissue so that we're, you know, putting the door frame back to the size that Mother Nature intended it. And when we do that, the doors or the mitral leaflets come together. In real time, using echo, we can see kind of this leakiness go away. And I think what's most rewarding about this, Zara, is the patients. They recover from the procedure in 30 minutes, and
exactly.
You talk to them, and they say, you know what, I can already breathe easier, I already feel better, and that's what it's all about. It's phenomenally rewarding to hear the patient say, I lived with this for 2, 4, 6 years, and now is the first time that I actually feel a lot better.
David, is it unusual, though, for doctors such as yourself who have been ensconced in the pediatric world, and you still are, by the way, of course, but to make such a jump over, I'll say, into the greater cardiac field?
Yes. I don't know if there's another... I certainly don't have a precedent. There are very few of my colleagues that do the same thing. You know, there's two elements of it, Zara. One of the challenges that we have in the pediatric world, and thank goodness this is the case, there are very few children that are sick. For the really complicated issues that might exist, for example, I'm working with the pediatric cardiology department, and there are specific anatomic problems related just to children. And when a child has that problem, for example, they only have one ventricle instead of two, one needs to be very creative at coming up with a solution, but there isn't a market, if you will, mm-hmm. So it's hard to get industry involved. So
yeah.
I think it's one of the reasons that pediatricians may not innovate as much as adults where there's a market there. I guess I try to be savvy and understand that if there's a venture capital community that's willing to fund innovation for the adults that have heart failure, that's great. I'm happy to play that game. But I also recognize, because I've diagnosed the 12, 14, 18-year-olds that have heart failure, that will benefit from the same therapy. So I think that to be a little bit creative about the process, you can create a win-win for both groups of people.
Well, absolutely. And particularly, you know, that if those children aren't treated young at age, they're going to be with you with those kind of medical circumstances, hopefully, later in their life. So to be able to stem it sooner rather than later.
Exactly.
The attraction for you to work in the emergency room, where does that come from? I mean, the quick turn decision making that's required? I don't want to jump to too many conclusions here.
You know, there are a whole host of different attractions. In some ways, it's probably analogous to the startup.
Mm-hmm.
As a startup, you know, I'm given a problem, heart failure and leaky heart valve, and the issue is go solve the problem. Well, I worked in the ER last night, and you know, probably saw 20 children, and everyone comes in as a unique problem. There's something, you know, whether it's shortness of breath or abdominal pain or a limp or a head injury, whatever, and I enjoy the problem solving. There are a lot of patients out there that we know what the problem is, diabetes, heart failure, whatever, and it's a matter of managing it. But I guess I enjoy the challenge of somebody giving me all the clues and letting me try to figure out what the problem is. So that's one element of it. The other element is really non-clinical, and it is, you know, medicine and disease is the great equalizer. Mm-hmm. And you see patients and families from all walks of life all walking into the ER, and as I've practiced medicine for a longer period of time, I've come to appreciate kind of the social element as well, the varying backgrounds that people come from, and yet the common love and affection, if you will, and concern mm-hmm. of a parent for a sick child.
Yeah, absolutely. That it transgresses everything. Now, you've been part of Seattle Children's Hospital for how long now, Dave?
About 14 years.
14 years. So what's been some of the organizational change agenda that swept through your hospital and the role you've played in it then?
You know, I think that there are, one element that is that has been important for us at Seattle Children's is to make sure that we offer the best quality care that we possibly can, and part of that is a matter of minimizing any sort of mistakes that may happen. And so there's been a huge focus and a push at the hospital for us to understand kind of the systems that we use, if you will, in taking care of patients and putting in place some safeguards. So computers and the sophistication of computers allows us to see a child that has any given issue, put some orders into the computer, but then have some checks and balances in order to use the computer to help us. The nursing team that we have, so many of them have been around for so long, and for us to have the nurse be a second check, if you will, on the physician who's prescribing any sort of medicine is also invaluable, to kind of take advantage of the team. So there's been a big push, if you will, at the hospital to make sure that we're working as a team to provide the best care and minimize any sort of mistakes that can sometimes happen.
You bet. So that's the internal facing things that allows the hospital to work. But then I suspect as well the onslaught of technology, whether that be the IT technology or like devices such as what you've come up with, devices and procedures to complement them.
Sure.
Again, for the consummate engineer, because that's what I would guess is where that problem-solving drive comes from, right? Is that's just in our fabric, but to find the landscape so broad this day and age.
Right. It is a challenge. It is a challenge, and within medicine, you find a lot of people that are specializing and then kind of hyper-specializing, mm-hmm. if you will. I find that one of the rare types of doctors these days is somebody who's able to keep abreast sufficiently of the broad range of medical issues, and they can kind of orchestrate the issue. That's probably another parallel between cardiac dimensions and Seattle Children's Hospital. In both positions, I find that I'm more trying to orchestrate the effort, if you will, knowing that there are people, you know, on the startup side, there are engineers that know more than I do about Nitinol. There are surgeons that know more than I do about the surgery, but being able to assimilate what they know in order for me to try to guide whether it's decisions on the startup side or same thing in medicine, you know, to be willing to consult somebody as it relates to the kidney issues or the heart issues or whatever and assimilate their feedback so as to make the best decision for the child. So I think it's probably one of the big challenges that we have is to use this information, use technology, but not to lose sight of the bottom line, which is patient care.
Well, yeah, and I think also, you know, that Hippocratic oath that you took, in amongst all the other oaths or related things to the engineering and technical world, but the level of responsibility that's on your shoulders, to wake up and realize, you know, in a passionate, positive way, that's what drives you and pulls you forward, but I suspect as well that can weigh on you at times, doesn't it?
You know, I guess I always see it as more of a privilege.
Yes, yeah.
You know, it is so rewarding to be in a position where, yes, the decisions are important and we need to make the right ones. You know, there's a number of children that come in with kind of inconvenient illnesses, if you will, but there's a variety of others that are life-threatening. And I tell you what, you know, I am so frequently inspired by the courage of these young children. Mm-hmm. They have some difficult curveballs that have been thrown at them, and yet they will just face each challenge one step at a time. You have the parents that are phenomenally loving, and it really puts an amazing perspective, if you will, on what's important in life. And that's another one that when I balance the startup company and children's hospital, you know, the startup, you fly around the world and people are interested in meeting you and talking, and you can give lectures, you know, summarizing what I've done. And you know, I think a lot of people are attracted to the adrenaline rush, if you will, of that. But I love the fact that I'm still in the trenches as a practicing clinician, because it just it keeps one grounded, you know, to see people dealing with issues that, that medicine throws at them.
You bet. In fact, you said earlier it's the inner, you know, timeless social equalizer, but also it helps you reframe to know that really all those big trappings of life are less important than altruism, the acceptance, inspiration, those kind of words, right?
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So you became a doctor after starting that engineering journey. Was it because of this convolution of things that came together early for you, or is it it's sort of, well, I'm figuring it out as I go along?
You know, it was a it's an interesting question, isn't it? And I think, Zara, your children are a similar age to mine. They're
right.
Not quite to the point where they're going to decide what they're going to do for their life, but they're getting there quickly. And so I have to go back, whatever, 25 years now when I was at Purdue. And I was fortunate. I tested out of 1 year of Purdue, and I ended up studying abroad in St. Andrews, Scotland. And the purpose of that year was to kind of step back and try to understand, who am I, what do I enjoy, reading, math, science, etc., and what do I want to do with my life, and what sort of a career do I think I would enjoy? You know, one of my goals at the time was to say, look, I want to enjoy what I'm doing. I'd rather have my career be more of a vocation and a passion than a job where I get a paycheck, but I'm not really enjoying it. And mm-hmm. You know, I was lucky to have the freedom to be at a great institution, take some zoology classes to see what medicine's all about, you know, just take a variety of classes, but also go for walks and just contemplate, if you will, you know, what I wanted my legacy in life to be, and what I thought I would be good at and enjoy. For me, medicine just really resonates with who I am, both on a scientific level, as well as on a personal and interpersonal level.
Well, and I would add to that, of course, is what you're being a dad. So give us that thought here on this profoundly important weekend, what being a father has taught you.
Your introduction was very kind, and you laid out a variety of different hats that I may wear. My most important hat has always been being dad. My children are 11 and 13, and they are just a joy, and being able to watch them grow and mature has been a joy. You know, I think it's important when somebody is thinking of a profession and a career to decide to what extent they want to prioritize family. And for me, prioritizing family was always extremely important. It's one of the other benefits of research as opposed to a purely clinical life.
Right.
You know, there are some clinical professions which are kind of a jealous bedfellow, if you will, and mm-hmm. it's difficult to be a present dad. With the research world, I have control of my boundaries, and so it's not by accident that I'm home every night for dinner. It's not by accident that I'll take off in the middle of the day and go watch my children's play at, you know, 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And I think the rewards are, and for anybody out there who's a parent, we can't help but be inspired by our children, by their youthful perspective on things. Despite the fact that it's a youthful perspective, I think it's a fresh and therefore sometimes a more mature perspective on whether it's local events, regional, or sometimes international.
Yeah.
I have just thoroughly enjoyed watching my children grow and develop.
And I think that that reverse mentoring you get from your kids, isn't it? Particularly being an entrepreneur and in business. I know in our household, if ever my husband or I get in a rock and a hard place because we're trying too hard, you turn it over to these young kids and they'll say, well, Dad or Mom, just do this. And you're like, why didn't I see that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, there's something to be said for a fresh perspective where you're not burdened with kind of the constraints of assumptions and whatever. And there's tremendous value in the fresh perspective of children. I think about that with my kind of work with innovation, and I look at some of the people that are most creative, for example, within the hospital, and oftentimes it isn't the professor that's been around for 30 years. He's kind of entrenched in his thinking. It's the young medical student where, you know, she came up with a new creative idea that nobody's ever thought of. So I'm a pediatrician for a reason. I love children, and I think there's huge value in children, both in caring for them when they're sick, but supporting them and being inspired by them, for the majority of them that are simply trying to create their own legacy.
And don't you find, Dave, too, that not everyone is of that mindset? Some can be threatened by the energy of youth or discounted. So I suspect part of your role is not just to be the mentor for those new medical students and others in their wake, but also to protect that way so they can thrive.
You know, I think creating an environment, as a parent, is probably the thing I try to do most. I can't control what my children are going to do or become, but we can try to create an environment which is safe, which is loving, which is supportive, and which fosters an environment where they can be whoever they want to be. Zara, I think, well said, whether we think of our children that are in school, and to provide the infrastructure, the inspiring teachers, et cetera, for children to learn, and it goes all the way up to through medical school. You know, this is actually interesting. I was having dinner with the chairman of pediatrics at Indiana University. And he's a person that I tremendously look up to. And he's the one that said, I'm always looking for a mentor. So my next mentor is the dean of the medical school. And I think that's important. I think that our growth and being willing to find examples of people that can inspire us, even if we're 40, even if we're 60, there's always somebody else out there that we can learn from. And again, we learn that from kids.
Particularly for you who've chosen to play both in the business world, the research world, and the clinical world, that more and more looking outside of those realms to see how you manage all those intersections is so important. Well, we've talked a lot about change in this segment, Dave, both professional, personal, industry. Tell me, though, how do you think you've changed by leading change?
How have I changed by living on the intersection? I think perhaps part of it is just trying to understand what change is, trying to understand how change comes about, trying to understand what the last 10 or 20 years, what has the road looked like. I would like to think that some of the creativity and innovation that we've funneled into Cardiac Dimensions is going to help people. And the better I can understand the dynamic that helped create that success, if you can articulate that dynamic to the next generation, I had a great ride. I'd love to do the next one. I'm already in the planning stages. But I'm also communicating with people that are 20, 25, and they're looking to create their own legacy.
Exactly, and to create that with them. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. David Reuter from Cardiac Dimensions, as well as Seattle Children's Hospital. It's been a real pleasure and honor as well to have a great dad send and save and share his wisdom today. Have a great weekend, Dave, and a safe trip overseas.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
You bet. Take care.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580. 544-2580.